Chapter 25. A while ago, hours, Officer Al had opened the hatch and thrown down the blankets from the bed. They'd barely hit the ground before the hatch slammed shut again. If Ryder kept his knees up close to his chest and the blanket wrapped around him as tightly as it would go, he could get warm enough to stop shivering. The trick was to have the edges pulled down tight enough to cover his feet and to not let any gaps open up. Even the smallest opening created a draft. He didn't know how long they'd been down in this place, but he knew it had to have been at least a day, probably more. For most of it, Jeff had been pressed up tight against him. Neither of them had said anything in a long time. If Jeff was mad at him, that was fine. He'd earned that. Ryder knew now that it had been stupid to try to get away, knew now that Jeff had been right all along, and he felt terrible about it. He'd apologized 5 or 6 times already, and Jeff had told him it was all right, but Ryder knew better. There was nothing all right about any of this, and for no better reason than being impatient, he'd made it all worse. They were down here in this shithole because of that. Jeff had begged him not to try to run, but he'd done it anyway. If they ever got out of this... No, they were going to get out of this. When they got out of this, Ryder was going to do something great and good. He didn't know what it would be, but it would be big and important. For the whole time that he'd been down here, he'd been bargaining with God. When he was delivered from this place, he was going to be the best damn kid in the world, ever. He thought he might have fallen asleep a couple of times, but he couldn't be sure. He'd never been in a place that was so dark that your eyes never adjusted. It was always like black ink on black velvet. He didn't even know if his eyes were open or closed. It was hard to know if he was awake or asleep. Jeff was asleep for sure, unless he snored while he was awake. On a different day, in a different place, Ryder would have poked him and told him to shut the hell up. Now, though, today, in this place, he kind of liked the sound. It helped him forget a little. He knew that Officer Al and Officer Kim were still here because he could hear their footsteps and the sound of furniture scooting around. He could also smell food cooking. Baked beans, maybe? He didn't think even for a second that they were going to share their food. The guards talked a lot, but Ryder couldn't make out the words. They'd laughed a few times, but they'd always sounded like they were mad. The words had the quick, punchy rhythm of an argument. Ryder hadn't been paying attention all that closely in the beginning, but he was pretty sure that each of the arguments, 3 of them in total, he thought, had come after a phone had rung, the muffled default tune that came with every smartphone. It was amazing what you could notice when there was nothing else to do but listen. Ryder was shocked at how calm he felt. He'd done his crying, and he was still doing his praying. And if he thought too hard about where he was, in an underground room where people might never find them if Al and Kim went away, he could get his heart rate to spike. But for right now, he felt sort of at peace. What was going to happen was going to happen. The phone rang again, and this time he held his breath to see if he could hear this end of the conversation. The phone call didn't last very long, but this time the argument afterward was a big one. The 2 men shouted at each other. Ryder held his breath to listen and squeezed his eyes tightly shut, as if that could improve his hearing. He thought he heard the word kill, but he couldn't swear to it. Maybe it was just the word he dreaded the most. There was lots of moving around this time, and something heavy dragged across the floor. Before, when the arguments happened, they were over and done with quickly, but this one went on and on. He had no way to know how many minutes, but more than a few. A half hour, maybe?
"What's going on?"
Jeff asked. He sounded groggy.
"I don't know," Ryder whispered. "Keep your voice down. They just got another phone call, and they started shouting. Something's happening."
"To us?"
"I don't know. I hope not."
"What do you think it is?"
"Shh! I can't."
Quick footsteps overhead grew louder, and then stopped closer than any of the others had been. The hatch made a loud thunk, and light poured into the space from the living room. The light brought a wash of warmth with it.
"Stupid idea," Officer Al was saying. "What's the sense of leaving that kind of evidence?"
"Hello, boys," Officer Kim said.
He was dressed like a doctor, wearing a green suit with a V-neck just like they wore in medical shows. The shirt matched the pants, and his mask hung down on his chest like a little bib.
"We're going to make a movie together."
Boxers couldn't quite close the deal at 6 hours, but he did make Blanton, Tennessee, in 6 1/4. The GPS coordinates from Venice took them directly to Hawks Mountain Road. They arrived at dusk, and Big Guy pulled the Batmobile off the rutted road into a tangle of bushes. If the satellite images were correct, the chances of anyone passing or noticing them at this spot were well south of slim. As the crow flies, they were less than a half mile from the Kadyrov's house. Presently, the field team sat in the first two rows of seats, concentrating on the video screen and the dashboard. From the driver's seat, Boxers worked the controls for Roxy, the latest in his obsessive purchases of aerial drones. In helping to design the specs for Batmobile 2.0, he'd made sure that Roxy's signal could be watched directly from the car's built-in color screen, thus bypassing the need to gather outside around a tiny laptop. The property featured four structures, at least one of which appeared to be a barn, and another that appeared to be a shed, or maybe a smaller barn. A small house sat nestled between those two buildings. It had the look of a playhouse, or maybe a guest house. Two windows on either side of a center door. A much larger house sat about 75 yards downhill from the barn, the nearest of the other structures. This one surrounded by two layers of security fencing. An old pickup sat out front and looked the worse for wear. As Boxers cycled in and out of the thermal imagery view, the engine block printed as cool. Significant heat plumes from two chimneys told them that somebody was home, but it wasn't yet dark enough to expect lights to be turned on.
"Do you think they're in there?" Gale asked.
"Let's take a peek," Boxers said.
"Not yet," Jonathan said. "Let's watch from here a little more, get the lay of the land. We have no idea what we don't know."
He wasn't sure what he was looking for, but he'd had his ass handed to him more times than he could count by walking unprepared into an unknown situation.
"Whatever's happening in there has been going on for a long time. A few more minutes won't make that much difference,"
said the hangman, Dawkins quipped. No one laughed. Roxy flew a 360 around the main house.
"Only two doors," Jonathan observed. "Windows are all closed."
"There's the source of their electricity,"
Boxers said, pointing to a generator in a lean-to open shed on the red side, the right-hand side, of the main house. Gale shot a forefinger to the screen.
"Someone's arriving."
A small SUV with its headlights on pulled off Hawks Mountain Road into what looked like a span of woods. Jonathan cranked his head around to see if he could see the action in real time through the back window. He couldn't.
"Did anybody see that driveway when we were coming in?"
"I wasn't looking for it,"
Boxers said.
"But no."
As they watched the screen, a man exited what looked to be an earthen berm to the left of the roadway, and walked to the driver's window. They talked for half a minute, and then the man returned to his berm. A gate pivoted open.
"And that, lady and gentlemen," Jonathan said, "is why we take our time on thorough recon."
"The next Roxy is going to have a directional microphone," Boxers announced. "We'll get our movies with sound."
"Follow the truck," Jonathan said. "See if it's anybody we recognize."
Boxers fiddled with the exposure, making the image as bright as possible in the deepening dusk. As the image shifted, Jonathan could see now that the SUV was a Honda. Whether through a zoom lens or an altitude change, the image looked to be taken from only a few feet away. The driver sat for a frustratingly long time after he'd pulled to a stop.
"Is he talking on the phone?" Gale asked.
"Looks like he might be," Jonathan said.
The angle and tinting of the glass made it difficult to discern details, but the shadow of the driver could very well have been talking on the phone. When the driver's door finally opened, Jonathan found himself holding his breath in anticipation.
"Be sure to snap singles in case he moves through the frame too fast."
"It's digital, boss,"
Big Guy said.
"Every frame is a single if I want it to be."
Jonathan blushed.
"Don't feel stupid,"
Boxers said.
"Sometimes you just get tired of not hearing your own voice."
Jonathan flipped him off. The driver stepped out of his door, then reached back inside and produced a drink cup with a straw in it. When he stood and turned, his features were clearly visible.
"Holy shit!" Dawkins exclaimed. "That's him! That's Timur Yamadayev!"
That settled it. This was the place, and it was time to take it down.
"Can you get a peek through the windows now?"
Jonathan asked.
"Is a wild bear Catholic?"
Boxers moved the controls while never taking his eyes off the screen. The image dipped to nearly ground level and zoomed up to the glass.
"For those who are concerned,"
Big Guy said,
"Roxy is still 30 feet from the building."
"Yeah,"
Jonathan didn't say.
"We're all concerned as hell for the health of the toy."
The window they'd chosen didn't show much. It was on the black side of the building, the back, and it revealed only a darkened space.
"Go around to the white side,"
Jonathan said. "The front."
"He just went through the door," Boxers said. "A little risky to bring Roxy into everyone's eyeline."
"I promise you I'll buy you a new one if this one breaks,"
Jonathan said in a tone that was normally reserved for small children.
"Don't forget that you don't bounce as good as you used to,"
Big Guy grumbled. The image shifted. Roxy eased in closer. She cruised past the green pickup and the black Honda on the way to the front window. The lights were on inside now. The curtains were drawn, but they weren't very thick, and they weren't pulled completely closed. There was enough of a gap to see glimpses of people as they moved around.
"I see two adults," Dawkins said.
"I don't recognize them," Jonathan said. "I thought we were going to find twins."
"What the hell is that one wearing?" Gale asked.
"Oh, holy shit,"
Boxers said.
"Surgical suit," Dawkins said. "That's one of the Kendall boys,"
Gale proclaimed. He was being dragged across the floor by his arm. Jonathan felt his heart rate double.
"Suit up, people.
We don't have time for that,"
Boxers said.
"We've got to do this right, Big Guy,"
Jonathan insisted.
"Night vision, speed, and violence. 3 extra minutes.
As he spoke, he exited the Batmobile and walked around back to the lift gate.